Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, July 25th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I am Scooter Lane.
From Studio, the plague is gone finally. I'm Scott Johnson.
And of course, with us is our producer, Roger Chang.
Hello, how are all of you?
We are good. We have a request for a t-shirt, Scooter.
Oh, which Scooter do you know?
I mean, Scooter Lane, of course.
Oh, okay.
What's that, Tom?
Reed Fischler on Twitter asked for a I'm a friend of Scooter Lane t-shirt.
That's not bad.
I love it.
We'll see if we can figure that out.
Let's sell some teas.
Let's start, however, with a few tech things you should know.
Tuesday, we reported that Facebook Hong Kong Limited had registered a subsidiary in China. However, shortly after the registration was reported, the online listing in the government database disappeared. A source tells the New York Times that approval was indeed withdrawn. Supposedly, the Cyberspace Administration of China was not consulted by local officials who initially approved the registration.
Hey, you're not getting that back, I think.
Oops. Blockchain company Tron. I love their name so much, has acquired the BitTorrent file sharing company. Tron founder Justin Sun says Tron is now, quote, the largest decentralized internet ecosystem in the world, formerly played by Bruce Boxleitner. BitTorrent says it has no plan to change its products or services or start mining cryptocurrency.
Yet. No, he didn't say yet. I said yet. CertCC has sent out a security advisory regarding a Bluetooth vulnerability discovered by scientists from the Israel Institute of Technology. Lior Newman and Eli Beham discovered it. Pairing devices do not sufficiently validate elliptic curve parameters used to generate public keys during a Diffie-Hellman key exchange. And if that doesn't make sense to you, don't worry. What you need to know is an attacker in range of two devices with the bug, and both devices have to have the bug, could get the encryption key and recover data sent between the two devices during an otherwise secure connection. Apple, Broadcom, Intel, and Qualcomm have all deployed fixes for the vulnerability, so make sure you update your OSs as they get pushed out. The Bluetooth Special Interest Group has also updated the specification for Bluetooth as well. There's no evidence that this was done in the wild, but it was a pretty significant vulnerability. All right, let's talk a little bit more about chat, Scott.
Well, chat, Tom, as you know, is a big deal, and finally, Valve's getting involved. Valve launched Steam Chat to all of its users on Tuesday. It was impossible to miss. It popped right up and made itself known. It's an upgrade to the platform's built-in chat function with new features similar to what you see in something like Discord. It includes the ability to create voice and text channels, support for embedded videos, pictures, and tweets, of course, and the ability to invite someone with a link. I see this as a continued effort by everyone else in the entire video game sphere to create Slack/Discord-like features in the wake of something as successful or as growth-ridden as Discord. So not shocked by this. Blizzard's done it with their service and with the Battle.net launcher. That was a big deal for them a few months ago. makes perfect sense for the biggest PC platform in the world to do it. I don't know how much traction this gets. It'd be nice if they had some video conferencing features. There's a few questions I have about it, but overall, I guess I'm a little surprised it's this been this long coming. It's about time.
It's a perceptual thing, though. There's no reason you couldn't switch to using this instead of Discord right now. Everybody just needs to download the software and install it, and you can use it for any game, right? It's just even more convenient if you're playing a game that's through Steam, and so many games are part of Steam as it is, right? But a lot of people I don't think are going to switch from Discord to this because they're like, well, I don't want to use my game library for that. Mm-hmm. When chat first showed up in Steam, it was a nice add-on, like, oh, I can say hi to somebody while I'm in-game. Whether Valve can get people to shift the behavior of Discord, which is I'm using this to talk to my fellow gaming friends, whether I'm playing or not, I don't know.
Yeah, it's also important to note here, Discord's made a recent push the other direction. So their new landing page when you launch Discord is no longer your list of friends or your private messages, and then off to the right is your big mess of servers. I mean, the whole thing's still kind of a mess, if I'm being honest. I don't think Discord's got great UI, but... you know, it works and people use it, so there you go. They've established themselves as a huge platform, and instead what they've done is reached more toward gaming. So their gaming page that you now land on lets you launch games from within that space. Now, sometimes those games are games you're playing on Steam, sometimes they're on Uplay, sometimes they're on other services, but the idea is that your friends have all explicitly said, yes, I'm playing World of Warcraft, or yes, I'm playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, or whatever it is, and you can now connect that way. So they made a step closer to Steam. I actually think that means something. I think the long tail on this is Discord makes a play, and there are plenty of others doing this, so it's going to be a very competitive space, but they make a play toward becoming a front end for gaming. Now, whether that's a full-blown store or not, I don't know. That's a long way from where they're at right now.
And I don't think it has to be a store to be successful.
It doesn't. Yeah. It could be, though. And that's where this gets interesting, because they don't really have a monetization method right now. They're not making a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. So that could be their way to do it. They've got the hearts and minds. Like, this is actually kind of a big deal for them. So that, to me, is a bigger news than Steam saying, hey, we're expanding our chat platform.
My question is, because I started using Discord here on DTNS because we have a Discord channel, and then I have another channel for another show, and the gaming part of it is I'm not utilizing at all, but it's a great chat platform mm-hmm. for voice and text. So does Steam care about expanding beyond the gaming community at all, or do they feel like they're just sort of keeping up with these other platforms to keep their gaming community happy and not going somewhere else?
The second thing, I think. I mean, I don't think they think that they're going to suddenly become Skype or anything in that regard. But they do want to be able to say, hey, we've got those features here. There's no reason to go anywhere else. What they don't want is people leaving the platform. And there's other stuff coming up out of Tencent in China and others where they're launching new services that are genuine competitors to Steam for the first time in a very long time.
And Line just acquired a game studio and is going to merge it into a subsidiary called Line Games. A lot of these messaging apps like WeChat are trying to become a game platform themselves.
Yeah, and the biggest, just to finish this up, the biggest game in the world right now, Fortnite, is part of Epic. Epic has a launcher. Suddenly Epic is now faced with this question. Now we have the biggest, most looked at every day platform. Do we go beyond what this is? And they could, like that. And they're owned by Tencent, or have a huge portion of them are. So that could change everything. So that is a really fascinating segment of the games market right now, and it's going to be really fun to watch.
Moving on to keys, security keys. Google announced it will start selling its own Titan security keys, which is actually kind of a nice a follow-up to our conversation yesterday. The keys, which provide universal second factor auth, similar to YubiKey, are available either in USB or Bluetooth versions to Google Cloud customers now and eventually selling to the public later. Google also introduced context-aware access that lets administrators define information like an IP address or a time of day to help identify the users on their network.
Yeah, it's almost as if Google PR decided to push the story about Google Authenticator being used at Google yesterday so they could get 2 days out of the story when they announced that they were coming with their own
keys
today.
Interesting timing, isn't it? I was like, it's Google's own. Oh, good. Yes.
But it is interesting that Google's getting into selling these things, especially because at the conference where they announced this, YubiKey is an exhibitor. YubiKo, I mean, as an exhibitor showing off their YubiKeys. And now Yubico is like trying to say, well, we think ours are still better because X, Y, and Z. And Google is not working with Yubico. You can still use a Yubico key on your Google account. But yeah, it's the big difference is Yubico uses NFC, which they feel is more secure than Bluetooth. They don't think Bluetooth is reliable, especially because the key has to have a battery to work if you're using Bluetooth. All right, Google also announced the Edge Tensor Processing Unit AI chip and Cloud IoT Edge software. The ASIC chip can execute machine learning models under space and power constraints. It's less than the size of a penny. Like, it's tiny. So it can go into these Internet of Things devices. It's basically a stripped-down version of the cloud TPUs used to train machine learning models. The cloud TPUs still create the model, and then the Edge TPU has just enough computation to execute it without having to wait for the cloud servers, which have to obey the speed of light. Here we are again, speed of light being a consideration in lag. Like, oh, well, if we can train the model and then have the model execute on these Edge units, then that'll be more responsive than if they have to go to the cloud and back again all the time, like Amazon and Microsoft's systems currently do. The Edge software will handle that interaction with the servers. So they're basically taking the Tensor platform, the Tensor framework, and creating an Edge version of that as well. Edge TPU will come in a development kit available in October. It's kind of like a Raspberry Pi module situation, and they just want developers to figure this out, to play with it and find uses for it. Now, keep in mind, Microsoft has IoT applications and devices. They've been partnering with companies like Qualcomm. Amazon Web Services has IoT-related software services and its own operating system for Edge devices. Every time Microsoft opens their mouth, they say intelligent cloud, it feels like. Or intelligent edge, I mean. We made a big deal about that. It's like, this is the next buzzword. You're going to hear them say it a lot. So this is the new battleground. And Google, with this move, wants to own the entire AI stack. They're like, you'll use our TPU cloud service for your training your machine learning models, and then you'll have our Edge processors in your devices, and everything will come from us, and you'll be happy. That's what they say.
Well, let's hope we will be. I love this stuff because I don't understand it hardly at all. Like, I feel like the entire cloud computing movement is a thing that is just ripping over my head like an actual cloud. And I'm trying to make a shape. I look at it and go, what shape is it? Is that an elephant today? I don't know. Maybe. But
I assume you use Adobe Creative Cloud.
Of course.
You understand the cloud
concept. What benefit I'm getting from all of this stuff. I absolutely know what benefit I'm getting. However, the nooks and crannies, nuts and bolts, very confusing to me. I love that they're going to put these out and just let people go nuts with them. And I like Tom's comparison to like Raspberry Pi. It immediately makes me go, oh, creative people are going to come up with cool ideas and new ways to do this. And I love that. So as dumb as I am about cloud computing and its actual functionality, I'm stoked about
it. I think you're smart about cloud computing. It's the edge that you're like, well, the edge of a cloud. Hold on. What's that about?
Right.
Yeah.
Also, when I hear Internet of Things, I'm like, what do I have? I don't have a smart fridge. What do I have?
Once they start putting these TPUs and sensors, it'll be
fridge
all kinds
at
of
the
stuff.
Speed of light.
Right.
That's ready.
Right.
The packaging for Microsoft's adaptive controller, you guys may have seen this at E3 and other events or in places that they've shown it, is also accessible just like the controller itself. The controller has two large programmable buttons and 19 jacks for accessibility accessories, which is an enormous number of jacks, to be honest. The package includes loops, multiple access points, hinges, levers, ribbons, make it easy to unpack. We're looking at an animation right now that Roger's showing for those who are listening via audio only. Even if you're someone who uses teeth to open things, seems like you could probably do that. The adaptive controller is $100 and arrives in September and is currently my number one pick for my favorite giant corporate cool product thing right now. I love that they made this. There's going to be a billion uses for it outside of even just the accessibility market, but them thinking in these ways and quite literally thinking outside of the Xbox is great, and I love it, and I applaud them for it.
Well, and you may laugh about opening a package with your teeth if you're not aware that that is a standard procedure for people in certain situations, and it's not a joke. It's like, oh yeah, no, I'm able to open things with my teeth if they're not a blister pack, and this is decidedly not. You can open this in multiple ways, and that's what accessibility is about, is not just the controller itself, but making the entire experience of purchasing it on an accessible website to opening it, to using it, accessible. And I that's what I love most about this is Microsoft showing that they really are trying to think about accessibility all the way through the product cycle.
Friends that I have at E3 who got hands-on with this thing, the other nice thing to hear is that it's actually nice. Like, it's a well-made product. This isn't just some weird half-baked olive leaf to say, look at us, we're super inclusive, look at our cool ideas to help those who can't help themselves or whatever, and just kind of create a PR stunt. It's not that at all. It's a really nice piece of hardware. I feel like it's just the beginning of what could be some cool stuff coming out of Microsoft. I hope it encourages other companies to do the same. Like, it's just rad top to bottom, and it makes me, I don't know, just really, for me personally, brings out a huge amount of respect for a company that's often perceived as a little cold and dismissive. And I think that's a really good move for them.
Yeah, it's clever marketing, but it's also something that you don't see very often. A real nod to people who have accessibility needs and limitations. It's really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Mozilla program manager Chris Peterson highlighted an issue with YouTube's recent redesign that caused it to run slow in browsers, except for Chrome. The redesign relies on a deprecated API that is only, or deprecated, somebody actually corrected me the last time I got that wrong, deprecated API that's only implemented in Chrome specifically. The solution is to force YouTube to run its classic mode. Firefox users can download the YouTube Classic extension. Safari and Edge users need to use something called Tamper Monkey and a user script.
Yeah, they don't make it easy to force classic mode, so you have to do these workarounds. But classic mode doesn't use this API. And even this API, even this deprecated API, will run fine in newer versions of the script package that Chrome runs. But Chrome doesn't run those newer versions. They run Polymer 1.0. Polymer 2.0 or Polymer 3.0 in YouTube would mean that this would be not a problem in Firefox or Safari. So we talked about this a little on this morning stream, this morning, Scott, but it's my belief that, you know, Chrome and YouTube are not all sitting together hatching a plan. The YouTube people want as many people watching videos as possible. They don't want this to be a problem in the browsers, but I'm guessing it's sort of an internal blind spot where they were all using Chrome and not paying enough attention to the impact of this. And there's probably a lot of work that needs to be done to put Polymer 2 or Polymer 3 into YouTube. And so now they're like, well, you know, we've got so many things on our plate. Where do we prioritize fixing this? Especially if the majority of their users are from Chrome, which they probably are.
Yeah. And a fix in the form of a plugin is kind of a bummer. Not really my favorite way.
It's a workaround. It ain't a fix. Yeah.
It's not even really a fix. You're basically running more code to fix a code problem. But I would really like them to fix this because I just think it looks bad. And I know that, you know, I agree with you this morning. This isn't like them sitting around going, we've made it harder to use other browsers for a Google product. Now, YouTube wants you to be able to view YouTube wherever you are on whatever device you're on at any time of the day you want to do this. And I saw this problem with Firefox and it super ticked me off and noticed that Chrome was running it just fine. So just from an appearance standpoint or whatever, go in there, tweak this thing, fix it, and everybody's happy.
Yeah, the nuns used to call this a sin of omission, not a sin of commission. They didn't intend to make it not work in Chrome. They just didn't think about it not working in other browsers.
They really come from nuns? I didn't know that.
Yeah, in catechism when I was a kid, we would talk about sins of omission versus sins of commission and how they're both sins just because you didn't commit.
What's the worse one?
That was the point. They're not, you don't get out like, well, it's just a sin of omission. They're like, nope, still a sin.
Yeah.
you're still condemned to perdition. It was a little harsher back then. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Now, breaking right before the show, YouTube is expanding its virtual reality app to support Samsung's Gear VR devices and adding a new feature that lets users watch a video together and chat. Well, Sarah, that sounds very similar to something Facebook has announced, or at least widely released as well.
Yeah, and very good timing. Can't imagine that these companies know what the other companies are doing. So yeah, news from this morning, Facebook has a new feature, which was actually in beta, so limited beta, possibly have used it before, called...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Watch Party started as what Facebook called experimental tool. They introduced it back in January. They talked about it at F8 for Facebook group members to watch videos together. Now, once a few people have joined, it kind of works the way a lot of these third-party apps has worked before. There's somebody who's the host. They can load up videos into a queue. If you are viewing it, you can suggest videos for the queue. The host can designate co-host to, you know, kind of help. We could all be in there kind of putting our queue together. And it's interesting because Facebook Live is not dissimilar to this, but that's live streaming. This is videos that people are watching on Facebook already, and Facebook's trying to figure out how to get us all to watch it together.
It's kind of like playing DJ with videos, I guess.
Yeah, but also the idea that whatever you're watching is in sync with whoever's watching it with you, and you're talking about it as if you're in the living room together. Again, this all sounds familiar. You know, I've heard this so many times. In fact, I was doing a search online this morning to be like, what came before Watch Party? Watch Party sounds very familiar to me. Weren't there a lot of other, you know, there are. There's Gaze, which is an app. I don't use it, but it's, you know, the whole idea is watch videos with people who are far away from you. And then there's TogetherTube, which is only YouTubes that people can watch together. Same idea. They all kind of work the same, right? Where there's a chat and there's a video in sync option. Watch Together is well known. It's always in slideshow articles about this stuff. And then there's a Chrome extension, which is called Netflix Party, which is interesting because, Tom, you mentioned when we were talking about this story this morning, wouldn't it be great if Netflix did this?
Yeah, and I couldn't remember if it was a Netflix experiment, because sometimes they do those hackathons and they come up with this stuff and it never really hits people. But it must have run across this extension before, because there's two things going on. One is the constant need of companies to want us to watch things together. There was a feature in Blu-ray that would let you do this. There was a feature in Xbox that would let you do this, and it never seems to catch on. But the Watch Party, the reason why I brought up the DJ analogy is it's not just we'll sit and watch a movie together. There's a host who's like, let me play these cool viral videos and we can all talk about them together, kind of feel to it.
Right. Didn't Xbox, I thought for a while Microsoft was experimenting with some kind of let's watch together.
That's what I just said.
Was that the one you were talking about?
I mentioned Xbox along with Blu-ray. Yeah.
I missed that. Yeah, I never actually got to participate in that, but I don't think that's still a thing. I think that's done now.
Well Facebook has been experimenting with a lot more original content. Its watch feature obviously is, you know, similarly named to Watch Party. And Facebook doesn't necessarily, that's a little bit different, right? Because they're content partners. This is like if I'm just going to throw out something on my timeline, maybe if Facebook could make it advantageous for all of us to get together, watch it, spend more time on the network, that of course Facebook would then be able to say, oh, people are spending more time, we like this, then of course they're going to add this option. I like this option. I would like us all to watch something and have like a really easy way to watch it together.
I don't think these things ever catch on because they're only fun for a while. And so they always make good demos. They make good betas because the beta period is short enough that people don't get tired of it, but they don't last. People love it, try it a couple times, have some fun, but it doesn't become a regular thing. Eventually you're like, you know what? I just want to watch. I don't want to have to go show up for the watch party. Like, I just don't think it has long lividness to it. Not livid, but something like that.
Well, so they launched it in January and did a little testing. We are now, they're now rolling it out to all Facebook groups. Obviously, some Facebook groups have more enthusiastic members than others. But I think it really depends on, how much is that person who's kind of owning this experience using Facebook already? Is that where their network is? I can see this working really well for certain celebrities and people of interest, but not my profile.
Yeah. I've got a pretty active Facebook group for our Tadpool people. And I could see this being really well handled there. And I'd actually say that this is maybe the best application for this sort of thing, because groups are inherently already a thing in theory that you joined in good standing, and that it's sort of a shared, already their shared ideology. It's not just some rando room full of people you don't know who are there to troll you. And so that already feels better to me. I've used big screen VR before, both on the Oculus Go and the Vive. And that's a sort of, you can also create private rooms, but that's sort of a drop in, drop out of randos watching YouTube videos, and it can get rough in there. So I actually think this is probably the best place for it, at least as a platform to then expand and do more.
I'm going to put my prediction out right now that this does not catch on. Again, so many people have tried this. There is a limited market for it. It will always be popular at first with a group because it's novel and new, but it's not something people want to do for a long time. What people do want to do for a long time is watch a live stream, whether it's somebody talking while they play a video game or just live, live streaming their life and chatting with folks. That is compelling. People like to do that. I don't know that they like, even if there's a celebrity host, to continually go have someone play videos for them as much. Maybe they just haven't hit on the right formula of the person who really knows how to put together a good playlist, and that'll happen and this will hit off. Or maybe you're right, Sarah. Maybe it's with celebrities where you have enough churn in the audience that even if one person doesn't keep doing it every day for a long time, people keep showing up because it's such a vast audience. But I just don't believe this ends up making a difference for Facebook.
I also don't think movies are a good thing. I think that's boring and dumb and weird for that format. Unless it's...
Because you don't interact. When you watch a movie in a theater, you don't... I mean, there's something to being around other people, but you don't want to sit there and chat with them while you're watching it.
The whole point is that some people do. Like, let's say you're watching, a movie you've seen 50 times. It's like your favorite kids movie. Like, you don't necessarily need to be there silently not chatting. That might be the fun of it.
Could be.
There are, there are instances where I think this would be fun. But yeah, Tom, you're right. Is it every Thursday? How do you, keep up the momentum of this?
Yeah.
Where, I could watch fail videos with my friends all day, but I think there's just a limited appeal, whereas the one streaming to many method of, say, Twitch or whatever, that also seems a little crazy on some level. Like, if you go back 10 years and say, hey, people are going to sit and watch by the hundreds of thousands somebody play a video game and comment on his play, you would have maybe said, sure, whatever. Well, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, that's happening. That's the thing. People are into it. So maybe we're wrong on this, or there's some curve we don't see. But I just don't know, man. It just seems like a weird... I couldn't do it for very long, I don't think.
The more I read about it, the more I'm like, live streaming. That's, people watching a thing that someone's hosting. Like, that's what works. I don't think we need to reinvent it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit, reinventing it every day, in fact. Submit stories and also vote on other stories submitted by your peers at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We are also on Facebook, and we have a group. Maybe we'll do a viewing party at some point, even though Tom and Scott don't seem to want to. Facebook.com/group/Daily Tech News Show.
All right, let's see what's in the mailbag, Sarah.
All right, Staff Sergeant Rob Jenkins. He says he is from so rainy Orlando, Florida. Had a few thoughts on physical security keys from our Google story yesterday that was more about Google employees than a Google product. But he said, speaking as an Air Force communication system troop for well over a decade, this is exactly the same thing that the DoD has been doing for about 15 years. Works great. Every employee gets an ID card known as a common access card, has a security chip installed into it with PKI certificates. They can be used for network access, computer stuff, email, logging into DoD websites. You just insert your card into a reader and enter your PIN. Easy. He called me Scooter. Scooter, though, wondered about the issue of people losing those cards and if that's just a huge hassle. Happens when you have around 3 million employees. It's going to keep happening. The old card is easily invalidated. New one can be issued. And then he said, P.S., and I think this is for you, Tom, go Cubs.
Oh, man. Sergeant Jenkins, I was with you right there till the end. Then you lost me on that. Last line. Actually, emailed him back saying pretty much the exact same thing. But this is great. This is great info. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. We also got another quick email from Brian, who wrote in on our topic about nudity on Facebook and religious.
It was the Rubens piece of artwork that was used in an ad, and a Flanders Museum's ad was banned because it had this classic piece of art in it that showed Jesus without a top on.
So Brian says, well, imagine my confusion when I heard that Pee Wee Herman was an accomplished painter. I didn't know. Took a minute to realize that Scooter was talking about a work of art by Flemish artist Peter Paul Rubens, not Paul Rubens.
This is what happens when you trust me to write your article for you and I forget Peter.
Not remember that was Pee Wee Herman's name. So good work, Brian. And sorry for the confusion. That would have been a really different spin on that story.
We are friends enough with the Flemish artist that we just call him Paul. That's why that happened.
He's Paul Rube.
Yeah. Pee Rube.
Speaking of Gojo, I don't know. I tried to do that on the fly. That was too hard. Scott Johnson, what's been going on since we saw you this time last week?
That's what threw me off earlier, because I used to, my nickname of growing up was Scooter. So
I'm really?
Seriously thrown by that. Hey, there's a lot going on, all kinds of stuff. I don't even know where to begin, so I won't. I'll just tell people to go to frogpants.com and keep an eye on things. There's always something going on. There's plenty of shows happening each and every day. I do not just this on Wednesdays, but I do a show with Tom usually on Tuesdays, although this week it'll be on Thursday, called Current Geek. Very excited about that. That and a whole bunch of other shows on the Frog Pants podcast page, so check that out. And that's probably it. Check me out on Twitter, because there's always something to be read and said there. I'm at Scott Johnson. And as always, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Formerly Extra Life.
Thank you to everybody who supports the show directly. There's all kinds of ways to support the show. If you just listen to the main show, there may be ads in there. That helps us out. If you want an ad-free version, supporting us on Patreon, we'll send out a link to an ad-free feed once a month. Or you can just subscribe to Good Day Internet through the Patreon, which gets you a longer show, pre and post show, more talking about all kinds of stuff. You can buy stuff in our store, dailytechnewsshow.com/store. We have brand new mugs in there, DTNS mugs with a green interior. Get them while they're green, dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
You know what else we have? We have an email address, and we'd like you to use it. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com is how you can give us questions, comments, submissions for topics, something you heard about last week, all of that. We are also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com.
Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.